Historically, America has proven to be a safe haven for Jews. I've often pointed out that George Washington's favorite Bible verse was Micah 4:4, which talks about how every man shall be able to rest under his own vine and fig tree, and there shall be none to make him afraid. To the father of our country, this verse from the Old Testament was a picture of what America can offer to the world, including to its Jewish population. But if we fast forward to modern America, virtually every day there's some sort of new headlines about conflicts, and especially how unsafe it is to be Jewish in America. That's astounding. We saw this, for example, in the spring on many of the college campuses. Well, we're going to talk right now with Rabbi Daniel Lappin, who is the president of the American Alliance of Jews and Christians. He's been a guest on this program many times. And I'm Dr. Jerry Newcomb, and I'm enjoying always talking with Rabbi Lappin. Thank you so much for joining us again. I appreciate it.
Thanks for inviting me again, Dr. Newcomb. It's always an honor to be able to speak with you, and it remains with me as a warm and uplifting memory.
Well, thank you. Okay, so we're going to go ahead and get into the modern problem soon in just a couple minutes. But I want you to give some historical backdrop, because you've often said that America has really been a great place overall for Jewish people. And so this modern anti-Semitism, what we're seeing now is a relatively newcoming phenomenon. Can you comment on that? America historically?
Yes, sure. I mean, I've always said that America's Bible Belt has been the Jewish safety belt. In other words, the reason that throughout all of history, there has never been anywhere where Jews have managed to live for as long in tranquility and prosperity as in the United States of America is precisely because of America's Christian heritage, not in spite of it. And so, not surprisingly, since the 1960s, America has been subjected to a steamroller of aggressive secularism. The entire struggle between the left and the right, or between the rulers and the ruled, the entire struggle boils down to essentially a struggle between those who regard Judeo-Christian values as vital for our nation's survival, and on the other side, those who regard Judeo-Christian values as terrible obstructions to progress. And one has to acknowledge that the victories have, for the last 7 years, have mostly been on the side of those who regard Judeo-Christian values as negative and obstructions and as things that have to be removed. And so, not surprisingly, all Judeo-Christian understandings of values and social life and family life and economic life, all of these have been meticulously eviscerated and demolished over the last 60 years, and we are now watching the results. In other words, what I'm saying as clearly as I can is that the absence of anti-Semitism and the security of American Jews has always depended upon the Christian heritage of America. And now that that has been so terribly undermined, it's no surprise. I wrote in my book, America's Real War, I wrote years ago, that we can unfortunately anticipate this this development. It was absolutely inevitable. It was going to happen.
Wow. You know, by the way, you can see some people on the side of the Judeo-Christian heritage trying to fight back. I mean, I think right now about the governor of Louisiana has proposed having the Ten Commandments in the public schools in that state.
Oh, absolutely. And these are all individuals, Dr. Newcomb. The institutions we have lost, and recovering them will require a huge undertaking of Jews and Christians joining together. And I think the prospect of getting my folks to join the struggle to restore the primacy of Judeo-Christian values was a hopeless task until recently. And now, as more and more Jews are suddenly beginning to understand that benign secularism never really existed, and it was always a brooding monster getting ready to pounce, and now it has, I think that will make it much easier for Jews to ally themselves with Christians in a way that you and I have been looking forward to for decades already.
So go ahead and comment on some of the recent anti-Semitism episodes we've seen, for example, in the spring with all these different Hamas protests on the campuses.
Everybody knows about them. Anybody who hasn't recently immigrated from out of Mongolia, anybody with eyes in their head knows what's been going on. You know, whether it's wanton attacks on readily identifiable Jews in the streets of Detroit or New York or Los Angeles or Chicago. And this has been, all the way to attacks on synagogues and Jewish gatherings. So, yeah, this has all been happening. Now, one thing, unfortunately, has to be recognized, and that is that a large part of it is dominated by Islamic immigrants. And I think we have to sort of candidly acknowledge that. We also have to candidly acknowledge that it was precisely the Immigration Reform Acts of 1965 and then later on 86 that dramatically increased Muslim immigration and diminished Christian immigration from Northern Europe. These were decisions that our elected representatives made to change the ethnic and religious makeup of America. They succeeded in doing that, and the only tragedy is how many Jews encouraged those unfortunate pieces of legislation that so dramatically modified the immigration patterns in this country.
Some of our best colleges, like Harvard and Columbia, I mean, historically best, saw all these different protests. Even Senator Fetterman of Pennsylvania, who's not always on our side or whatever, but he used the phrase pup tets for Hamas. You know, they popped up all over these college campuses. By the way, there had to be some money there somewhere.
Qatar has been clearly funding an enormous amount of mischief. But then a lot of it has also been funded by people like George Soros in one way or the other.
You know, can you explain that to me? Because sometimes if somebody criticizes George Soros and some of the left-wing causes he supports, and then some people will turn around and say, oh, you're being anti-Semitic because George Soros is Jewish. Well, I mean, that happens. I'm serious. You laugh, Rabbi, but your comments.
Well, George Soros, whom I don't know personally, but by his actions you can know the man, his entire value system has as much to do with Judaism, you know, as brain surgery has to do with Bozo the Clown. It's just he has nothing whatsoever to do with Judaism. He has contempt for Jewish values, and his entire outlook is shaped by the values of secular fundamentalism. That's what's really going on. And at the root, and this is perhaps the most important thing that I want to impart, if I may go ahead and say this.
Surely.
Can I tell you something?
Yes, yes.
I think it's really important to understand the link between secularism, the values of secular fundamentalism, and anti-Semitism. And we've got to understand that there's a general and utterly reliable rule in the mathematics of statistics. Any event at all which happens randomly can never happen uniquely, which is to say that if you toss a coin 50 times, you're going to get roughly 25 heads and 25 tails, right?
Yes.
And if you, you might get 24 and 26. But if tossing the coin 50 times, you get one head and 49 tails, then you know this wasn't random. Something is at work. It's a trick coin, or something is happening. And when you look at the Jewish people who have not only survived for 3,500 years, but who still, many of whom still live today with the details of life of 3,300 years ago. The Passover is celebrated in meticulous detail, as it was on the Exodus of Egypt 3,300 years ago. A little child on the streets of Tel Aviv or Jerusalem or Los Angeles can read the words of Isaiah the prophet. There is no other nation, there's no other culture in the world like this. And therefore we know this is not random. And therefore the presence of Jews is a huge problem to those who wish to promulgate a secular worldview. Because as many great historians have said, the presence of Jews among us is the most eloquent testimony to God's role in the world. This is a reality, and it's a very awkward reality. And hatred for Jews is essentially hatred for walking evidence of God's role in the universe. And so as secularism has spread, and as Christianity has been undermined in America, why wouldn't anti-Semitism grow? I mean, it's as night follows day.
That is so fascinating. I think that helps explain why the Nazis, who, were so anti-Christian as well as anti-Jewish, of course.
Yes, they were.
They wanted to extirpate. In fact, if you just read, for example, the book, The Hiding Place, I read that recently again.
Corrie ten Boom.
She and her sister ended up in concentration camps because they hid Jews, and then that was illegal. That was in their native, the Netherlands. But you read the encounters she had with the different Nazi officials, and they were so upset with her and her sister for doing this. So how about if we close on this, because we only have about 2 minutes left. Does Israel have the right to exist? And therefore, if it has the right to exist, does it not have the right to defend itself? And it seems like there are those on the left today that say, no, it doesn't have the right to exist, and it doesn't have the right to defend itself.
Well, In only 2 minutes, I'm going to recall the time I sailed across with my family, sailed our boat across the Pacific Ocean. And it looked like I'd made a mistake, but it looked like we'd run out of water halfway across. And I remember laughing to myself in sheer misery and humiliation. The Constitution guarantees me a right to life. Where's the phone number I dial to make sure somebody comes to keep me alive? My point is that without such a phone number, a right is meaningless. And so I'm actually not going to agree with you. I think the whole question of whether Israel has a right to life is nonsensical, because where exactly do you go to claim that right? United Nations? I don't think so. International Court of Justice at The Hague? I don't think so. So I don't think there is such a thing. I think as long as Israel exists by the grace of God, there it is. And obviously, if every nation should defend itself. I don't think it's a wise idea for us to talk in terms of Israel's right. Because as soon as you raise that question, well, then there are many people who are going to say no. I don't think there is such thing as a right to exist of a nation. When a nation exists, there it is. And it should defend itself with all its ability and to the extent of its fullest power.
All right. We have 30 seconds to wrap up. What would you like to say in closing? And is there a website you want to give?
Yes, I think that would probably be the wisest thing for a Jewish rabbi to do. And that is reach me at rabbidaniellappin.com. I'm on the web, not to be confused with my brother, Rabbi David. I'm Rabbi Daniel Lappin, and easily available on the web.
And Lappin is spelled L-A-L-A-P-I-N. Thank you, Rabbi. All the best.
Thank you. Talk to you soon again. Bye-bye.
Sure. Bye-bye.